Hey there! Welcome to Season 2, Episode 23, also known as Episode 55 of the Retro Game Club podcast. My name is Hugh, and joining me, someone who just gave 1,000 bitcoins to the hacked Bill Gates account, Rob.
Yeah, I really think that's going to go someplace good. Not into a 14-year-old kid in Malaysia or something. Not in his pockets.
Yeah, I don't know. I was just, so we're recording this about like 30 minutes after, I guess, Twitter got completely owned.
Totally owned. It wasn't even just those famous people. There's like Bitcoin Twitter accounts that got hacked. Just insane.
Yeah, I think this is going to turn out, based on my experience in IT, that they probably gave some third party access to manage accounts. There was something about like all verified accounts, which I assume is not us, were like locked right now. And that tells me they probably hired some people to do account verification and gave them like some API key that can just do anything to a verified account.
Because I was thinking like there's no way like Elon and Gates and all these people don't have two-factor authentication, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, this kind of hack, it's an API key. It's something that has permissions to modify stuff across the entire system.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I think people are probably getting fired over this one.
I predict the director of security gets promoted. That's usually my experience with these things. Hey, so what have you been up to?
Oh, man. Yeah, it's been a while since we recorded. So, sit back. I kind of have a lot here. So yeah, it was my birthday / 4th of July week that I always take off. And, we have a little family cottage in the middle of Michigan. It's kind of my birthday present for my wife was 2 days alone with no kids and no her either. You know, just like I haven't been alone since April at all, like not even in a car commute. So that was a bit relaxing. And since I always have games on the brain, we have one of those boat lifts that you kind of pull into. It's like a metal structure, you know, and you pull into and the boat lifts up. And every time I pull into that, I always think of Top Gun for NES landing on the aircraft carrier. Mm-hmm. So I attribute my good boat parking skills to playing Nintendo as a kid. But
yeah, well, you put on the show notes here, parking a boat reminds you of Top Gun on NES. I legitimately wondered, and this is a serious question, I really thought parking a boat might be a new Switch game.
Yeah, I mean, it probably is, actually. If not, we can make that happen.
Yeah, that's the whole game. You're just parking a boat. It's like 9 cents.
Yeah, and it's the exact same mechanics as landing on an aircraft carrier for Top Gun. I like it. But yeah, and I've also really been diving into Twitch. I never thought I would be saying that in my life, but I randomly caught Billy Mitchell's Twitch channel live, and it was a real surreal experience. I don't know if you or any of our listeners have seen this.
No, I generally stay away from Twitch, not because I have anything against it in particular, but just because I have such a backlog of other things I'd rather watch. I know Twitch is really like background noise, right?
Totally,
Yeah. So it's like you're working and you just want some background noise. But even then, I still have like 2 million podcast episodes in my backlog.
Yeah, I just put it on my tablet and I have it on when I'm cleaning or even just falling asleep or something sometimes. But I'll tell you, man, this Billy Mitchell thing. So I'm starting with the bad first. So it's a weird shot from down up to Billy playing the arcade cab. He's playing Donkey Kong. He's going for a world record, you know. And the guy's amazing. I mean, he is incredible at this game. But then there's this guy. No, don't get me wrong. I'm not judging him. But there's this guy in a mask. Like, you know, the masks everyone's wearing around everywhere.
Okay.
And I don't know if he's goofing on everyone that's watching, or he's, so anyway, he has this really weird horror movie, like laugh, like high pitched laugh, like the Joker or something. I don't know. But anyway.
Mm-hmm. Could we get him to be like a hype man on this podcast? Like, he's just on, and whenever we say something amusing, he just laughs?
Kind of, but not in a nice way, I guess. And
okay.
Maybe I just don't get it. But after he leaves, it's just Billy playing the game, and every once in a while, like, Billy's phone will buzz, and he'll be like, hey, let's see if this is more hate email. And sometimes will be, or sometimes it's someone being really nice to him, and he reads it, and that part's actually kind of interesting. But moving past that, I've been watching this guy named, I spelled it wrong here in our notes, Darbian.
Darbian, yeah, he's the Super Mario Brothers speedrunner.
Yeah, he's been doing a lot of Super Mario Brothers, Super Mario Land 2. So I actually caught him get a new world record one time. And this guy I mentioned before, Arcus, doing a lot of Ninja Gaiden. And I guess on July 18th, there's a big Ninja Gaiden competition happening soon. So there's a lot of Ninja Gaiden on Twitch right now. So that's been kind of interesting for me to watch. It's a whole new world for me. I know Twitch has been around since like 2013 or something. But yeah, how about you? What have you been up to?
Let's see here. I saw that Limited Run Games is doing a physical printing of East Origin for Switch. You know, we just did our East episode. I think that's out now.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we talked about how, like, it's 20 different publishers that have, you know, published East games in America. So this is a different one. This is .emu, who also does their Android games, did this Switch port. They may have done the Vita and possibly PS4 port also. Mm-hmm. But even though I already own this game at least twice, I went ahead and ordered the collector's mega edition of East Origin.
Nice. Why I not? Thought about and, it.
Yeah, I actually thought, I for a while was sort of debating whether to get the Star Wars Racer remake. I bought the just straight up Star Wars Speed Racer port from them.
Mm-hmm.
But this remake, it's not a bad price. It's $30 for the Switch port. But I don't know. I think I have enough copies of that game already. And East Origin, like the not collector's edition, is just $30, which is, I think, not a bad deal for that game.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Speaking of cheap things, Genesis Mini, I guess, was half off this week.
Yeah, and, man.
For me, that's like evidence that this whole mini system thing has maybe run its course.
I think we have a news item that kind of solidifies that as well. Like, what else can you even do?
Yeah, I'll get down to that in a minute. Ars Technica borrowed a bunch of my scans for an article about video game prices. So that was kind of interesting.
You mean like borrowed, like they didn't ask?
No, I just, everything on my, they took them right off my website, but in the footer, I just say this is all Creative Commons, so I don't care.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I use the exact same license that Wikipedia uses mm-hmm. for all the content on my site. So they actually did credit me. I mean, they spelled my name wrong, but they did actually put a credit in there. So it was kind of,
oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Something. Someone with a similar name to mine will eventually turn up in a Google result for that.
Yeah.
And just on a slightly related note, I was like, you know, my wife and I have been debating, like, where are we going to live after our kids are in college, which mm-hmm. is much closer than I care to think about. And I just realized, like, if I'm ever going to move, I have to, like, cut my game collection by, I don't know, 20% at least. Mostly because I don't want to pack games that I'm not going to play.
Mm-hmm.
So I put up a couple 3DO games. Well, I'm going to say games in quote, okay? It was, one of them was Tom Kite Teaches You How to Hit a Golf Ball, which is just a video. And the other is a Discovery Channel series on some kind of aircraft carrier. I don't know. Some Navy doc. Basically, it's a Discovery Channel Navy documentary for 3DO. So neither of these are games, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to go into specifics, but those two games, I got more for them than I have spent on my entire 3DO collection, including the 3DO.
Wow.
So I don't know if those are like, if one of those two is like rare, I don't really care. I'm just like, well, there's no chance I'm ever going to put these in my 3DO and like watch them. Like,
yeah.
Like I grew up in an army house. I don't really want to see a documentary about aircraft carriers. I've been around enough of that in my life. And there's a very good chance I will never play golf. And if I do, I'm not going to learn from a 3DO game.
And it's not like you owned these for any nostalgia purpose anyway.
No, no, they were included. So when I bought my 3DO, the guy selling it had a bunch of these just various like full motion video kind of garbage titles. I like full motion video games, but these are like FMV garbage.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, I just want the 3DO. I don't want any of that junk. He's like, listen, you just got to take it. So, I didn't even give any money. I mean, that was nice. Yeah. So I'm going to kind of look through and see if I have any other things that I consider to be things I will never in my entire life play that then I can maybe get a few bucks. The one I'm sort of debating on is like I have a Space Ace Laserdisc,
mm-hmm.
like an arcade Laserdisc for Space Ace. And I know I can get like $200 for that. But it would actually make me happier if I knew someone that was restoring a Space Ace arcade game and I just gave it to them.
Listeners, take note.
Right, because like, what's going to happen is like, the person that buys it on eBay is someone who thinks they can flip it or someone who just wants it like on their wall.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you have like, so if somehow you've acquired a full Space Ace cabinet except for the disc, or you know someone who does, let me know. Email at retrogameclub.net. And I paid like $6 or $7 for this thing. So it would not take much to get me to part with it. Only because it's really awkward to store.
Yeah.
Like, if you have 100 laser discs, you can store them. If you have one laser disc, now you have a storage problem.
If you have one laser disc, you're probably going to hang it on the wall or something, like art.
Yeah, but this is just in a generic white envelope that says Space Ace.
Oh, yeah, you told me about that. That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not, I'm going to hang it on the wall, so. all right, let's get to some news. So, also from Ars Technica, the site that misspelled my name, we traced Namco's new Pac-Man remake to its source, a 2008 fan ROM hack. So there you go. I guess I didn't realize there was a remake of Pac-Man going around.
Yeah, and I played this video, and it actually looks like a pretty fun game. I got to give it credit, but I wish they would have given the author of it credit.
Yeah, well, what comes around goes around, because the author technically is ripping off their IP.
Mm,
so true. Now they're ripping him off, or her off, and they can get into a big suing match, I guess, but I have a feeling Namco's going to end up winning that.
Yeah, well, I guess Namco has, I mean, this is how Ms. Pac-Man kind of happened, right?
Right, that was Midway, I thought, that did
Yeah, that's right. I always get all of them confused. Yeah. So,
similar situation, but yeah, it's a great analogy. Great analogy anyways, like, so there, yeah, they link out to romhacking.net. You can see other things by this this hacker, including, oh, he did a Sosarian for the NES. If you like Falcom games, it's not actually Sosarian for the NES. It's a Super Mario ROM hack based on Sosarian. Interesting.
Yeah, his name is Coke774. And, yeah, so this was on the... yeah, the Namco Museum, the kind of expensive one, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I was sipping this severely underrated beer that I got at Aldi's.
Something...
So it reminds me a lot. I have this CD that I picked up when I was in India called The Return of Mario and Pac-Man.
Mm-hmm.
I bought it from a real electronics store in India. And it's just a collection of shareware games and like 20 viruses.
Wow.
Maybe that's what happened to Twitter. Someone inserted a CD that they bought at a market in India.
You might be able to sell that and get a lot of money for it.
Well, so just off topic, the moment that I told my family I'm no longer fixing their computers was when my sister went to... an Eastern European country, and I'm not going to besmirch the reputation of this country, but she was on vacation in Eastern Europe. It's a country that's known for having nice beaches. And while she was there, she bought a CD of MP3s,
mm-hmm.
right? And put that in her computer, and lo and behold, her computer was completely annihilated after that. And she asked me to come over and look at it, and I'm like, well, you have all the viruses. how did this happen? And he said, well, I got this CD from this guy on the street with MP3s. And I said, yep, I'm out. That's it. Not doing this anymore.
Wow.
All right. Super Mario Brothers with John Madden commentary.
So this is not as cool as I thought it would be. Not that I'm putting it down, but I thought this was going to be some crazy edit. But it's a short video of people kind of spoofing John Madden as if he's commentating Super Mario Brothers World 1-1. It's not actual John Madden clips. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So, but I still want to put
Caliendo.
This in here.
He's a, if, do you watch football?
No.
Oh, so you're in Detroit. You don't really like have a team there, right?
No. We did, 0-16. So.
Okay. So he was on, he used to do impressions on the Fox Sunday football show.
Okay.
He was replaced with Rob Riggle recently. This probably happened 10 years ago, but 10 years ago feels recent. And he did John Madden on there a lot. Yeah, so he's known for his John Madden imitation.
Oh, yeah, it's a good imitation, and it's pretty funny. It's just because of the title, I thought it was different than it was going to be.
No. Yeah, I thought the same thing, too. I thought they took clips from a Madden game.
But still, still check it out, listeners.
Which one of us added this article? Because I didn't read it.
I did, and it's... listeners, welcome to the most boring article ever. Comparing bare silicon on two Game Boy audio chips. So, this is on Hackaday, and the short of this is that there's kind of... And I could be getting this a bit wrong, but there are two different... Game Boy, like original Game Boy motherboards, I guess. And most of them have, or all of them have the same transistors and stuff like that, but the capacitors are different. And this, you could tell the difference between the capacitors. And it goes into geometries and yada, yada, yada. So if you're really into Game Boy sound, we have a story for you.
Yeah, so... The short version is Game Boy Color used a cheaper audio chip than the original Game Boy.
There you go. Yeah. But
like
just the
every
capacitor.
Other hardware revision ever.
Exactly. Yeah.
I have at least one of the PlayStations with that, like, you know, audiophile audio chip or whatever in it.
Yeah. And I got the I got a Neo Geo with a serial number. I think it's less than 600,000 or 60,000.
Okay.
At one point, they started using cheaper capacitors and those as well. And okay. I guess you could actually hear the difference. I cannot. If you use Launchbox, a whole new version came out, version 11. And since I posted this in our show notes, 11.1 and 11.2 have come out.
Which look like bug fixes, so you're not missing too much.
Yeah, yeah. And the big deal with this one is you can now record gameplay really easily and also kind of archive and sort your videos of your gameplay. So pretty neat if you're into emulating on your Windows machine with Launchbox.
Analog details the NT Mini V2.
They are going to take my money. I promised myself I wouldn't buy one of these because it was... I always thought this was an overkill, but I think I need this. So yeah, this is a new version. This is a new version of the Analog NT Mini, which is an NES emulator, very very high end. Mm-hmm. And the upgrade has a better UI. It has video scalers. You could do an HDMI. And an analog out at the same time, or two analog outs at the same time. And it also, they completely rewrote the emulation core in it. So a lot more accuracy and stability.
That's weird. I've never seen a rewrite of code that was ever a good idea.
I know. But these guys have a really good rep, so I do trust them.
Yeah.
It might be why it's delayed, though.
Yeah, they do have a really good reputation. That is true. They don't list the price yet. They don't.
Especially, it says probably around $200.
$200, I would at least give that a pretty serious consideration. $200's about the most I'd be willing to spend for this.
Totally. Yeah.
I might have to sell like a third 3DO game to get that though.
See, for me, the reason why I never wanted, that's funny. The reason why I never wanted these was because like I have an original NES that works amazing. That's plugged in and set up all the time. And I have my computer for emulating. Why would I need this in the middle kind of device? And now I kind of see why. There's a lot of cool stuff you could do with it.
There is a Super Mario hack you wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
Starlight Mario. Starlight.
It's a weird font they use. So this is a ROM hack of Super Mario Brothers 2, the Japanese version, not Super Mario USA. And, it's way better than Super Mario Brothers 2. It's actually fun. It's interesting. It's weird. By weird, I mean, like, you'll just see Toad kind of hanging out in the middle of a level. You'll swim in the darkness and have, you know, different kind of creatures that normally you wouldn't see in Mario water. It's fantastic. The whole thing takes place at night, by the way. That's why it's called Starlight Mario. And it kind of has the, balloon fight type, stars in the background, unless you're in a dungeon. And I can't recommend that. This is so far in this podcast, you know, we're 50 some episodes in. This is my number one ROM hack recommend for all of our listeners. Yeah, at least check out a video of it. And if you have over $100,000 just sitting around, what would you buy?
I'm going to go with two tiny houses off a lake somewhere in northern Minnesota.
You wouldn't just buy a rare Super Mario Brothers that is still boxed and still has the hang tag on it?
No, I would put that on eBay right now.
And get $114,000?
Yeah. I'm sure everybody listening saw this article. I mean, because it's like mainstream news coverage. Whatever.
You could do whatever you want with your money, but this just seems a bit excessive.
And I suspect it's not a very good long-term investment. If you're buying, I assume the person that's buying it is buying it because they think it'll be worth $1.4 million in a few more years. But to me, this is like, there's going to be a bubble for this stuff. And the bubble is when Gen Xers start dying.
I was just going to say that, yeah.
Like Elvis memorabilia right now. Like, I subscribe to a lot of, like, estate sale, you know, sites. And it sure looks like there's a whole lot of, you know, baby boomer memorabilia being cleared out, you know, fire sale prices right now. So, you know, this stuff will be popular for a very small window of time.
Yeah, it's not like the younger millennials and Gen whatever is after that has nostalgia for Mario Brothers, and they could also play it on their Switch already. So why would they spend that kind of money?
Right.
It's not like this guy's going to open it up. It's
just and they don't get games in boxes anyways. So
exactly. Yeah. It just makes no sense.
Right. To me, this would be like buying a rare LP. It's like, well, I can just listen to that album on Spotify. Why do I need this?
Yeah, exactly. this next article I debated putting on here. I wondered what you thought about this article. I don't even know if it's an article.
It's BuzzFeed. So I probably just looked at it and said, oh, BuzzFeed.
Yeah.
And it's, what do you call the pits in Super Mario Brothers? I call them a pit. Okay. So that's the third place vote getter.
Yeah, so it's pit, gap, trench, edge, hole, or something else. So yeah, in Super Mario Brothers, the thing you jump over, what is that called?
Is this like a pop versus soda kind of thing?
Is there a right answer to this?
That's right. Other than, unless the creator, unless Shigeru Miyamoto clarifies it. But the problem is he'll use a Japanese word that probably can translate to three different things in English.
Yes.
Yes. That's the problem. There's not a one-to-one, there's really not one-to-one Japanese English translation in most cases.
And then we'll have the people who did the last East game translate it, and it'll just be whole.
Right, be whole, right. Big whole.
On Retro RGB, SD to SNES Game Boy open sourced, the author has been revealed. So, oh, wow.
Was that a mystery?
Apparently. So, yeah, so I don't even know if we reported this, but so the SD to SNES is an EverDrive cart for your SNES. So you could play all your SNES games from a SD card right on your actual console. This new firmware for it that was on GitHub by an anonymous programmer would allow you to play Game Boy Advance and, what was it, Black Game Boy Color games on it.
Okay.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
So it was anonymous until June 28th. So there's the GitHub link here. So if you're interested in that, and if you have an SD2 SNES EverDrive card, you might as well get this firmware so you could play more games on it.
Where was I? Oh, yeah, this is a cool one. The Lost Street Fighter II Champion Edition for Sega Mega Drive. So I can testify that back in the 90s, Street Fighter II Champion Edition for Sega Genesis was delayed frequently, and resulted in many customers who decided to take out their rage on the employees working at the store telling them the game was delayed. I don't understand, like, you see, you know, I don't want to, like, get into current events too much, but, like, you see that today where, like, something happens that's out of the store's control and customers rage at the person making close to minimum wage over it.
Yeah.
Don't be that person. That's all I'm saying. But yeah, we get a lot of people that would like yell at us when we told them Street Fighter for Genesis was delayed.
And also a word of advice, and this is something I'm going to tell my kids, and if I ever write a book one day, it'll be, you know, one of Rob's mantras. Mm-hmm. You know, whenever I call a tech support company, you know, say like Comcast or something, you know, and you have to talk again to someone who is probably making, you know, close to minimum wage, and just get screamed at all day, I just remain as calm as possible, you know, and I say, like, hey, man, like, I know this is not your fault. Mm-hmm. And I know you probably talk to, you know, the garbage people of the world all day long. Is there anything you could do? Like, I feel so bad for you. Is there anything you could do for me to help me out to fix this thing? And usually they can't, but they go the extra mile to try, at least try, mm-hmm. and they're thankful, and you get so much more that way.
Yeah, and you're also being a decent human being, which is...
Yes, yes.
But now this article speculates, you know, is comparing the the unreleased version versus the released version. There's a few month gap between the two, and the speculation is that the first draft of it just wasn't very good, or wasn't, you know, as good as the Mortal Kombat port.
Mm-hmm.
And so they did a lot of work to really improve the quality of the game. And I guess it was good because Street Fighter II on Sega Genesis is actually very good. I think it's a really good port.
Me too.
I think the Super Street Fighter port is really good too. So I guess it was worth the delay.
Yeah, yeah. It was worth you getting screamed at for a few months?
Yeah, sure, why not? I mean, I learned to take abuse. That's one thing if I learned anything from retail, it's how to take abuse from people. And not get upset by it.
Yeah. Yeah. Usually if they're screaming at you over nothing, they have a lot more problems in their lives than they're letting on to.
Yeah.
For our probably UK listeners, the Win UAE just got released to 4.4, which is a Windows, Amiga, and Commodore emulator. And this also, like Launchbox, adds better video recording features.
Yeah, I mean, and the Amiga was not a total wash in the U.S., but it was, you know, not common. I had one of these Amigas that they have a picture of here. And I think Amiga's a great computer. But yeah, in America, it was really hard to find software for it. So my Amiga phase did not last very long.
It's just crazy because anytime you went to that friend's house, which, you know, happened to be the friend of people in this one. You know, at home, you might have your Tandy or, you know, your Mac or whatever. And you go to your friend's house and see the Amiga and it just blew all those out of the water.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Even like the current, like the newest IBM PC, unless you would went out and bought like a super expensive video card or something, right? Like the Amiga looked better than IBM PCs with, at the time, expensive video cards.
And Macs, yeah. And it was just marketing, I guess. I don't know. Marketing that the others won for no reason.
So remote code execution on the Nintendo 64. Maybe this is how those guys got Twitter. So I didn't realize there was a modem for the Nintendo 64. Maybe I knew that all along. But apparently you can remotely hack a Nintendo 64 if it has a modem. And I suspect if I had access to an X-Band modem, I could figure out a Genesis hack you could do through the X-Band.
Yeah, and there's a cool video of like exploits you could do with this, but yeah, the DD had the modem built in, right? Or did it just plug into the DD port? So one of those two things.
I'm not really familiar with the DD, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It just, you know, it never came out in America. It didn't have a real big library, so I have to just plead ignorance on what the 64 DD did.
Yeah, but these are really smart hackers that... So what could you do with remote code execution on an N64? Like, just not even, like, diving into this article. Like,
well, I mean, I guess... So if they're playing a game... I mean, like, you couldn't really do... Other than annoy the person on the other end, because, I mean, they could just unplug it. Like, there's no hard drive on the Nintendo 64. Mm-hmm. If they happen to have a memory card connected to the controller, maybe you could hack that. Well, actually, definitely you could, right? So I guess you could corrupt their save games. Like trying to run a Bitcoin miner on the Nintendo 64 probably wouldn't work very well.
But I also think they're saying you could actually use this to hack the console you're on.
Well, right, but there's no permanent storage on it.
Oh, I see what you're saying, yeah.
So like once you reset it, any hack you've done is gone. Except for battery backups, which so would be the controller memory card. And again, assuming this is done through the DD probably has some sort of internal storage that you can hack.
Mm-hmm. True, yeah. Yeah. Interesting. It's way above my head.
Sega's next micro hardware is a 36-game arcade machine.
Groan.
Whatever.
So this is, if our listeners somehow have not seen this, this looks like a candy cab. It looks like a Astro City or a Net City.
Yeah. Now, I do see USB ports in the back, which are probably for controllers, but that also means someone will mod this and let you run other games on it. And this actually would be cool to run other games. Only because the games that they're... It has 36 games. The games they've announced are not like... things I'm super excited to get, you know, because I have Genesis versions of all these. And in some cases, the Genesis version is basically as good as the arcade version.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the games they've announced are exactly what you would expect, right? Alien Storm, Alien Syndrome, Altered Beast, Columns 2, Golden Axe, Virtua Fighter, right? I mean, this would be good for Virtua Fighter. That would be kind of fun.
What would be great with this is that if you can tether these together and play against each other on them, on two different ones.
Yeah, I think you almost you almost have to do that, or even a co-op, right? Because I mean, you got Altered Beast and Golden Axe on there.
But I don't see that anywhere in this article. Maybe it hasn't been announced yet or something, but...
Yeah, I mean, I see it has five ports. One of them is audio. But it looks like it's got HDMI, it's got a USB in, and then two USB out. And I'm assuming the USB out is so you can chain some of these together. That's the intention, is my guess. What they'll actually be used for is to sideload ROMs.
Yes, totally.
Funky S, all your retro games on a keychain. So if you have really great eyesight, this is the thing for you. It's a little miniature, tiny thing that you can run emulators on. And it can fit in the change hole of your pocket, apparently.
And it even has shoulder buttons.
Yeah. I mean, I like the concept a lot, but I there's no possible way I could play this. So
what I would compare this closest to is a Game Boy Advanced SP.
Yeah, but it's smaller than that. I can see the SP. But this is, I mean, it's an awesome idea. It's just, you got to have good eyesight. It's a Kickstarter. It's got 15 days to go, probably less than that by the time you listen to this. And it's already like three times past its goal.
It has a pretty fast processor too. A Cortex A7 1.2 gigahertz. I mean, that's not really joking around. And
no, yeah. No, I mean, I think it's a good little piece of hardware. It's, you know, one of these little tiny motherboards, of course.
Mm-hmm. 90 minutes to the charge. That's not too bad.
Yeah, it's neat. I mean, I like it. I just can't see the screen.
And it's still bigger than the Game Gear Micro. I don't know if that's true, but I'm just going to go and say it.
Let's go ahead and say that's a fact. If you like technical articles over on nerdlypleasures.blogspot.com, there's an article about the Intellivision memory layout. This one is also a little bit over my head. But if you're thinking about doing Intellivision programming, this is kind of, I'd say it's pretty informational. It talks about the Intellivision CPU and, you know, again, what regions of memory you can load your game into. And it's a neat article. I mean, I like it, but it kind of like for the Intellivision being a very powerful machine, you can also get a good understanding of what the limits are.
Yeah. And really the short of this is, it's much easier to code for other systems, it seems like, than the Intellivision.
Yeah. I would someday like to try coding for the Intellivision, but yeah, it looks hard.
Yeah. Way above my head.
Yeah. It turns out it's probably, these old systems are actually way easier to program for than you think, because you have a finite number of operations. You know, you don't have to figure out like, oh, I have to bring in like 2 gig of dependencies from node.js. And if someone does one thing, now suddenly the whole like app falls apart, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's very straightforward. That's kind of what I like about old assembly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So this is also like a over your head one, definitely for me too, but I like this. Build a no slot MIDI interface on the Apple II game IO socket. So this is a crazy hardware project where at the end of it, you get a MIDI out. And this is a very long article. Lots of like huge pictures showing you exactly what to do. And this is definitely a hardcore Apple hardware project.
Yeah. If you don't have some breadboards and a lot of cable sitting around, just walk away from this one. This is intense.
Yeah, it's pretty tough. Maybe slightly easier, the GameCube loader. So this is a mod for the GameCube that gets rid of the CD drive so you can run games off an SD card. You can load up to 1 terabyte SD card on this thing.
Yeah, I might need this.
And this looks a little bit easier than the Apple hack we just talked about.
Yes, it's pretty much rip out the mini DVD drive from the GameCube and plug this in. Yeah. Done.
Yeah, looks pretty easy.
Yeah, it's called the GC Loader. And I didn't really look at this video, but I'm assuming it has a user interface and all that stuff.
Yeah, it looks like it's pretty easy. Super Mario 64 Maker mod. So now, what is this for?
This is crazy. So this is a mod of Mario 64. And if you know about Mario Maker, combine the two together, and this is Mario 64 Maker from just a Mario 64 mod. And it works exactly like you would want it to. And whatever you think that means, that's what it means. It's just you drop elements where you want them to be dropped, and then they're there. And you set what needs to happen for a star to pop up and to beat the level. And that's how it is. And I think everyone needs this in their lives. If you like Mario Maker, I mean, this is for you.
Yeah, I always thought I would like Mario Maker, and then I really have barely ever played it.
Well, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but programmers like us and a lot of our listeners, I would rather program something than mess around in a builder like that.
Right, right. Yeah, because I could download RPG Maker and develop an RPG, but for me it's more interesting to figure out how to do things.
And while you're doing it, you're actually building a framework yourself, you know?
Yeah, yeah, not a very good one, but the challenge of building the thing to me is more interesting than actually building the thing. That's a really weird way to put it, but someone might understand.
You're right. I often tell my friends that when I'm programming, often I feel like I'm playing a video game. Like, it hits the same part of my brain, you know?
Yeah.
And I would say as cool news as the previous article, this new Lego NES with a CRT monitor and a scrolling Lego Super Mario World 1-1.
Yeah, this is pretty weird, too. But yeah, this is going to be the most scalped Lego set in history, where you build a replica of the NES with a TV and a Mario Brothers cartridge and controllers, and it's going to take you like a week at least to build, and they'll probably charge you $400 for it, and people on eBay will have it for $1,000. Wait, no, I'm wrong. It says $229, so $230 for this Lego set.
It's so pretty, though, and I don't even care for Legos, and there's on the side of the CRT that you build, there's a little crank, and you turn the crank, and the screen moves with Mario jumping around. And World 1-1.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it looks awesome. It is not worth $230 to me.
No.
And the time also to build this.
I'm not really into building Legos. I mean, I do it all the time because I have two kids now, but not really into building Legos myself.
And then we will wrap up with Ocarina of Time mods.
Yeah, the first one is a Super Mario 64 style. So it's, if you could picture it, it's kind of a hodgepodge between like levels of Super Mario 64 where you, from afar, it looks just like it, maybe a little bit different color palette because it's actually in Ocarina of Time, but when you really get into it, like certain things aren't where you think they would be right when you get there. Yeah, it's pretty interesting project.
And then a mod also of Ocarina of Time called Dark Hyrule Fantasy, which is, I guess if you thought Ocarina of Time was too easy to see, this is a mod that makes the game more difficult to play. I don't get this one. I mean, I get that it's a cool graphical style, but I have a hard time. Like, I can barely see these screenshots.
It's so if you watch the video clip, there's a lot of like spooky elements, like haunted house type thing, and mummies floating around, and it's not complete yet, but they released kind of a demo of it, and it's a little harder to see. It's definitely a dark theme, but I think it's pretty cool. It looks a bit more like I guess like Zelda meets Diablo or something.
Yeah.
That was a lot of news.
It was a lot of news, yeah.
Should we talk about topics?
Yeah, we don't have a topic this week. Although it's possible we'll insert an interview at the last possible minute, but we might also save that for next episode.
Yeah, we've been talking, and it's just like, we're both so busy, we don't want to just have throwaway topics, so we're not getting rid of topics from our episodes, but we are just not making them mandatory anymore. We have still tons of interviews lined up and a lot of topics we want to talk about. We just want to do more research for them. But
yeah, most of my free time is doing college research right now, you see, so that's exciting.
You're finally getting your degree.
Finally, yeah. Yeah, after flunking out of community college 2 years ago. That's kind of the big thing for me. And then at least in the next couple of months, it looks like my kids probably won't be going back to school full time. But for my... Well, your kids aren't in school yet, right?
No.
Yeah. I don't know if you're... Yeah. I mean, kindergarten yet. So yeah.
No.
I have a kid going to seventh grade, and like their whole plan for going back to school, they're basically going to give you an option of you can send your kid back to school and half their day is spent like washing hands and changing outfits. Or you can do remote learning, but if you do remote learning, they're like, well, you must be there 6 hours a day and blah, 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 you know, like all these rules. Because they were very lax on it. You know, because when this stuff all happened with no notice, they're like, I don't know, join a Zoom meeting, teacher might be there.
Yeah.
And now they're trying to get really rigid about at-home learning, which means more of my free time is going to be spent, like, or really be one kind of my wife's, making sure that they're doing their work.
Yeah. That seems stressful.
Yeah, it seems like I thought, honestly, I would get more free time as my kids got older, but I'm in this weird period where I actually have less.
You know, obviously the pandemic sucks for everyone, but a little part of me thinks like, man, if I had no kids during this thing, I'd be working from home and just playing tons of video games.
Oh, yeah. If I didn't have kids, I would be 50 pounds heavier right now. And definitely playing a lot of video games.
But, you know, while we're talking about a few housekeeping items for the podcast, I just wanted to bring up that over the past few weeks, our listenership has kind of skyrocketed. And I just wanted to thank everyone for listening. And I would definitely say, like, the cool thing about this podcast, the one cool thing, is that this is all retro news. Like, yeah, the news we report is new, you know, stuff happening about retro stuff, but it doesn't get old. And neither do the topics that we've talked about or the interviews we've done. So if you're a newer listener, if you go back and listen to older episodes, and I'm not saying this because we don't make any money from this. We have no sponsors or anything. I'm just saying, like, if you enjoy these newer episodes, you'll probably enjoy the older ones as much. So go back and give them a listen. And that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah.
Should we dive into the reason we're all here? Game Club?
Yeah, some Game Club games. Let's go.
Well, Dan Hess, in a previous interview, picked this one, Toe Jam and Earl. It was a Genesis game released in 91, and, all right, let me try to say this correctly. It is a roguelite, alien, funky hip-hop game that you crash land on Earth, and you have to find you and your Toe Jam and Earl. The two characters need to find about 10 spaceship parts to get back to your planet, and Earthlings, which take the form of like ice trucks and stuff like that, boogeymen, mailboxes, can harm you, and you could also get kind of little upgrades along the way. Did I describe that kind of correctly?
I have never been able to figure out what this game is about.
Okay, well, I would say the most impressive two things about this game are the music. It's definitely known for the music. It's fun and top-notch, especially on the Genesis chip. And the fact that it's a roguelite. It's a procedural generated map each time. Each level you get to, by elevator. So I know you're on Earth, but it doesn't really look like Earth at all. It's all some kind of fever dream. This game, this is a strange one for me. I give this game a strong recommend to anyone who hasn't played it, especially since it's on every Genesis collection. But it's just not for me. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's just a little bit too slow, or I'm not blaming the game. I'm blaming myself. Like, I know this is a good game. There's really nothing wrong with it, but just not for me.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. Like, I get the appeal, I think. The problem is I don't really understand the game. And it's not from lack of trying. Like, I buy a lot of Genesis collections. This is always on there. I pretty much always try it and have a hard time figuring out what I'm supposed to be doing most of the time. It is a good soundtrack. I mean, like, I'm not going to argue about that. I think it's a kind of fun soundtrack. I'd watched a speed run of it, hoping that would help. It did not. It was even more confusing, perhaps, but it's a game like that. It's about a, like, 18 minute is the world record on it right now.
That's not too bad. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Again, it sounds like, I'm sure the tone of my voice sounds like I'm down on it, but I'm not. It's just like you, I pick it up probably once a year, every other year. And I just kind of don't care. I don't know. Even back, I remember playing this when it came out, and I have the same feeling now that I did back then. So, I hope our listeners liked it better than we do, but, how about your game?
Let's see. Yeah. So I played Soul Blazer just because, my belief was it was going to be similar to Ys. It is a little bit in that it's like an action RPG. It's a very sort of weird game. I've played through the first world, I guess. It seems like there's multiple stages. And I finished the first world, and I think I like it enough that I'm going to keep kind of playing it a little bit here and there until I get through the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's like an action, like you're some kind of space traveler. That's what I got out of it. And you're landing on this world, and all the people of this first village you're in have been captured, and you go into this dungeon, and by hitting certain things in the dungeon, you release people, and sometimes you release goats, and sometimes it's flowers. I know it's confusing, but you're essentially unlocking people from this, like, weird, you know, demon prison kind of deal. Fight enemies, you do get magic. You only have one magic spell at the beginning. The magic's kind of hard to control, because you don't really control it. I guess that's why. The sword part, like the actual sword fighting part, is pretty easy. Even though it is like some of the same developers that worked on the first East game, it is an action-based attack similar to Link to the Past. It's not nearly as good as Link to the Past, but it's still a pretty
It's compared good, to Link to the Past a lot.
Yeah, it's compared to it a lot. And it is similar in that it's an overhead game where you have a sword that you swing.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, like, so far I like it. The difficulty isn't too bad. The first boss is really hard until you figure out, like, the pattern to beat him, and then he's really easy. Mm-hmm. A lot of 16-bit RPGs are like that, though. You know, the boss is completely impossible. Even just action games, right? The boss is totally impossible until you figure out the one trick to beating them.
Yeah, then you do a no-hit kill on him.
Yeah, I did. Well, when I figured it out, I did a no-hit kill on the boss. They're really easy once you figure out the pattern.
And the I'm on Wikipedia right now. The director of this, is it the director or what did I click on? Did I click on the wrong thing? Director? No. Did ActRaiser 2, and worked on Shenmue.
Oh yeah, yeah, long career. I mean, the crew on behind this is definitely solid. I mean, there's good good pedigree prior to joining Equinox, or was the name of the company that did it?
Quintet,
yes. Equinox is a game. Quintet is the company. And, yeah, it's like a really good crew. And I know there's like two sort of sequels to it, and I'll probably get around to trying those two.
Mm. Unfortunately, this one I just watched a video of, but you brought up Ys, so while on vacation, I took my Vita for some retro gaming. And I went on that rant in the last two episodes about my experiences with East 4 and how the computer, the RetroArch crashed a few times. So I copied my save games to my Vita and I played through, and I'm talking like another like 6 hours. So I got back to where it crashed the first two times. And I don't know if like my, you know, kid needed me or, you know, I had to run to the restroom or what was going on. But I decided, you know what, I'm going to plug in my Vita while I walk away to charge it a little bit. Apparently, when you do that with RetroArch, it crashes.
Nice.
And it all happened again. So I rage quit East 4 and I watched a video of the rest of it. Very disappointing, but I just couldn't do it all again. I mean, it's like the same thing three different times. Love the game, but couldn't do it.
Well, it's too bad. I like the game. I mean, I'm a big fan of East 4, but yeah, I understand.
But, you know, shame on me for emulating, I guess. You know what I mean? So I really can't complain. What game are you going to do for next Game Club?
Next time around, I am going to do... What am I going to do? Donkey Kong Country, because it was just released on the Switch. Mm-hmm. If you have the Switch annual subscription thing.
Yeah, the $20 to do some stuff.
To do some stuff. I hear you can back up your save games to the cloud.
Mm.
Whatever the cloud may be.
I'm going to get a little summary. I don't know why this game that makes me think of summer, but I'm going to do Skate or Die.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do it on NES, but Zach, our social media maintainer, linked to the MS-DOS version.
Yes.
And he warned that the Apple IIgs version looks better, but it was crashing for him. So, yeah.
And this is on, there's a lot of different ports of this too. I like Skate or Die. And I can see why it makes you think of summer. TNC Surf Designs is also a game of that same era that always makes me think of summer.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I like Skate or Die, and I have a cartridge of that. So,
yeah.
I will give that a whirl.
So if any of our listeners play any of these games or any games we've ever talked about, any retro games, have any retro projects, news, comments, whatever, please reach out to us. Email at retrogameclub.net. That is email at retrogameclub.net. Or our Facebook, you could go directly there. If you go to facebook.retrogameclub.net. Or you could hit us up on Twitter at RGC Podcast. And if we ever ask for Bitcoin, do not give it to us.
Yes.
It's not us.
It is almost probably not us. Let's get to some email. So Majors writes in about a couple different topics. He kind of agrees with us. I think we covered this on the episode. Like you had mentioned, having less time than ever, even though you have more time than ever. Mm-hmm. And he feels the same way right now. He asked a few other PC Engine experts about the Ding Dong game that we were referring to in EGM. And the theory, the best theory he got is that it is Don Doko Don.
Mm.
Which sounds, if you said it fast, does sound like Ding Dong. And I probably played this game at some point. I think it's possible I have. The KFC console reminds him of the time Soulja Boy created a console or said he was going to. I forgot about that. Yeah, there is a better version of Donkey Kong for the Intellivision. Obviously unlicensed, called DK Arcade. And I have seen that, and it is good. The legality is questionable. Some feedback on Streets of Rage 2, one of his favorite games. Notes that most people consider that the best in the series, and it's always fun just to go and play a few levels. He was kind of surprised that I was not a fan of Max because he is a pro wrestler. Yeah, it's true. I usually do not like the big, slow guys in games. I don't like Zangief either. People that grew up on games are 50 years old now. Of course, he makes comment that he grew up on games, but he's not that old. But of course, yeah, I mean, if you were a teenager in 1978 playing Space Invaders, you are definitely over 50 now. It's not even close. If you were a teenager, that matter, I guess in like 85, wouldn't you be? If you were 15 in 1985, how old are you today?
Don't do that to me. I don't know.
Okay, well.
I just think of War Games, you know, Matthew Broderick playing Galaga.
Okay, how old is Matthew Broderick?
Let's look it up.
Wait, over 50, right?
Yeah.
Now subtract a few years because he was probably like 25 when he was playing the 18-year-old.
Yeah, he was born in 62.
Okay.
So that is, geez.
So that'd be 16 and
58, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Maybe I'll see. But anyhow, he remembers going to any place with arcades in 1980. In fact, he used to go to a bar after school to play games in their small arcade area. He realized later in life the owners must have been turning a blind eye to them because legally he should not have been in there. He was told by... Right. So his parents told him that when he was young, like around three, he once escaped from the supermarket or escaped from their eye and went to the supermarket across the street to play the candy vending machines.
That's crazy. That's
pretty, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Pretty terrifying moment for the parents, I'm sure. But PS2 modless hack. He says he stopped modding consoles after the PS2. Ended up using disk swapping methods to play imports and bootlegs. Did mess around with something called McBoot, which is a memory card exploit with a hard drive. I'm not familiar with that, although I would be curious to see how that works. But yeah, so now he's kind of thinking about PS2 hacking a little more. Also votes for Blue Curacao for Sonic Booze. And then wraps up with some feedback on Ys. So longtime Ys player, apparently. Said he first played it on an 8088 with a CGA monitor at a friend's house. Which, if you ever played that version, it's, you know, I actually think it's a pretty good version of the game, but it, you know, it looks dated. But really liked it a lot, got it for the TurboGrafx-16 CD sometime later, and was completely blown away by the Redbook audio and voice acting. Beat the first game, the first chapter, the first night he owned it, but still feels like it was completely worth the $60 along with $300 for the add-on. And then has been playing, bought the FM power base to play SMS games on the Genesis with FM audio. Played through Ys on that, played through a few days of level grinding, but then had a battery corruption issue. Oh boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
so he had my same experience with Ys.
Yeah, I feel like in those old games, you almost have to replace the battery before you play them. So, and then on social media, apparently, we asked, how's everybody doing? And he said he's been doing pretty good. He actually managed to find another part-time job while on the whole pandemic. And it's an outdoor job, so I guess that keeps off a few pounds and helps you avoid cabin fever. And playing games about 20% more than beforehand.
Nice. I'm jealous.
Yeah, I mean, my additional, like, I've played through, like, multiple, like, huge RPGs this year, and it's mostly because my wife has been on a book deadline. She has to write, like, I don't know, I don't want to go into my whole detail of my wife's career here, but she's got to have, like, 2.5 or 3 books done by January under contract, so. It means in the evenings, she's working a lot, and I'm like, oh, I guess I'll play through Final Fantasy VII again, or whatever.
Nice.
All right.
Joe writes in, playing the latest Game Club games. He thought Soul Blazer was a pretty fun adventure game. Doesn't play quite as well as Link to the Past, but it's a nice little departure from Zelda. It feels more like a later Terra Nigma. How do you pronounce that?
Terranigma.
I've never seen that one.
Yeah, so that's
another quintet. Adventure.
Yeah, it's the third game in this like Soul Blazer trilogy, and Overclocked Remix. I think just did an album of remixes from this game. It's considered to be a really one of the best 16-bit RPGs, and I'm really bummed that I missed out on it the first time.
Is it in English and everything?
I think it was a Europe-only release.
Okay.
But it probably had a Japanese release, but I think it was, like, not released in America, but had a European release.
Okay, so I don't feel as bad for not hearing of this one.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why it would get translated for Europe, but not for America. Oh, here's why. December 1996 it came out in PAL territories.
Okay, there you go. He back in the day, he always had his eye on Toad Jam and Earl. It was one of those games that made him want to get a Genesis. He liked the cartoonish characters. You could wander around an open world. He thought it was amazing that it was procedurally generated. In retrospect, it had a distinctly 90s flair. That's definitely true. In kind of a slow collectathon. That's a good way to describe it. Seemed like a great game to play with a friend. And it had a funky soundtrack that was really memorable. Great main theme. The original game was certainly more memorable than its sequels, which are more of standard platformers. So, yeah, it seemed like he's a bit lighter on it than us. A little bit more happier with it than us.
Yeah, it's weird because I like procedural games in general. I like Picture the Box. It was the dungeon one. I have it on my shelf right here.
Diablo?
Not Diablo. No, the Genesis one. Fatal Labyrinth. Have you played that?
No, I don't know that one.
Okay. It's on every Genesis collection of all time.
It must be one of those. It must have a box or something. Something about the art or something that I just always skip over it then.
It looks like a JRPG. That's probably why you turned it away from it.
There you go. I probably look right past it. Super Retro 64 writes in. He recently purchased and played Doom 1, 2, and 64 on his PS4. He never really played much of Doom except at a friend's house in the 90s where it didn't have speakers, let alone a sound card, and it sounded like this. And he links us to a YouTube video of Doom with just a PC speaker, and it's kind of hilarious. He was blown away when he first heard the game, how the game was supposed to sound. He really enjoyed the music of the first two games, had a lot of fun with Doom 2. He was curious about Doom 64. He wasn't sure if it's better than Doom 2 because it was really hard to see. Yeah. And he missed having the guy's face at the bottom of the screen. So, yeah, thank you, Super Retro 64 and Joe and Majors for those emails.
Yeah. We got some just general feedback from social media. So I'm just going to read a few of these. Zach was kind enough to put together a few good kinda comments.
Last minute
stuff.
Here. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff here. So Nathan, regarding the zip disk image for our logo, he said he remembers in a security class, they were joking about ideas on how to secure data, and his favorite response was, use a zip disk, because who has a zip disk? Yep, that's definitely one. That's how we keep the missile silos secure, I think. Robert, not you, a different one. Regarding 2600 Legacy of the Beast, he says, Shadow of the Beast is one of the few games he actually had the original disks for on his Amiga. And also, thank you for the East Deep Dive. It's a series that doesn't get talked about as much as Dragon Quest or Final Fantasy or even Mana. And he thinks he's going to check out the PSP games after listening to it. And let's see.
Nice.
Jim writes about the Sega Micro Arcade console. Why are Sega's early titles like Zaxxon, Taxscan, Congo Bongo, Astron Belt, and Turbo always left out of these collections? I did a little bit of poking around. And at least in the case of Zaxxon and Congo Bongo, it appears Sega used a third-party developer for part of it. And I suspect they don't fully own the rights to the game and or the source code. And,
makes sense, yeah.
And I think Astron Belt, the only emulator that does that correctly is Daphne. And Daphne, the developer is very adamant that it is a non-commercial license for Daphne.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a sufficient amount of money would persuade him otherwise. I don't know. Maybe he's a good programmer. Maybe he doesn't really care about getting paid for Daphne. But I think that's why you don't see Astron Belt, because you would have to use that emulator. I don't think there's another one. I looked at like a MAME compatibility site today and it said no Astron Belt, which I was kind of shocked to see.
Yeah, that is kind of shocking. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I could have, of course, been checking an old or just generally bogus site. And Rick makes a comment about Pac-Man sake, $31 a bottle. He still wants it.
Yeah, I did a lot of texting with people I know that have friends and family in Japan. And I'm really trying to figure out something. I want at least one bottle, you know?
Yeah, I would be surprised if we do not get Pac-Man liquor in America.
Yeah, it feels like it would sell. And like you said, it looks like something that Target would sell.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, yeah. I can definitely see Target selling that.
Well, I think that wraps up this episode.
Yeah, so thanks for listening.
Thanks, everyone.